in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
Stephen Godfrey, welcome to you and to our listeners to another episode of Phantom Island.
Presented by Homefield.
Baseball season is drawing to a close, and so naturally, we're here to talk about the Tennessee Oilers for some reason.
Feel the fever. Catch the baseball energy in Nashville.
We're actually here to talk about the Athletics.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Oakland Athletics.
Okay.
Not the Las Vegas Athletics.
Athletics.
Not even the Sacramento Athletics.
Athletics.
They're officially known.
I laughed out loud, LOL'd, in our office before we recorded this because I looked up the Major League Baseball standings. We have 2 weeks left of the regular season. And if you go to MLB.com and you check, like, the wild card, go Mariners, it just says Athletics.
Yep.
So it says, like Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah.
Right? Houston yeah. Astros.
Yeah.
Athletics.
Yeah. The bulk of this episode is going to be me having a conversation with Jen Ramos Eisen about the debacle that is the in-between place that the Athletics are in right now.
Mm-hmm.
They play in a minor league ballpark in Sacramento while they wait for an increasingly expensive stadium to be built, in Las Vegas.
TBD, right? Officially TBD?
Stuff has happened. Okay. Like, I'm going to add a little addendum to this. Like, there is concrete getting poured. There are, like, indicators that this is...
Well, that just forward. Could be, like, a normal Tuesday for the mob.
That's fair.
Like, fresh concrete might just be solving some other problems we don't know about.
Jen is a reporter on... Jen is kind of perfect for this story because they are a reporter on labor issues.
Mm-hmm.
Minor league baseball enthusiast.
Mm-hmm.
Las Vegas native, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And have also spent a lot of time in Northern California. So, kind of checks all of the boxes.
And I just have to say, yeah, on a microphone, as a Braves fan,
yeah,
took a shiv to that...
Pat McAfee.
Absolutely shivved Pat McAfee. And was it not Manfred on the stage? Who was it? Was on the stage with McAfee All-Star weekend in Atlanta.
I want to say it was Dave Roberts, maybe?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was Dave Roberts.
Yeah.
This was all over the initial revoking of the All-Star game from Atlanta,
yes,
for state of Georgia voter registration, voter rights stuff. And then, of course, Major League Baseball just sort of brought it back and
yep,
nothing really changed.
No big deal.
No, I was just impressed with, as someone who, I don't want to sideline this, but shout out to Jen, because I've sat through so many press conferences where no one had the gumption. No one had the tact to just be like, hey, actually, all bullshit. This is all bullshit right now. Wonderful moment. Watched it on the internet over and over again like it was a trick shot, you know?
Yeah.
That's my dude perfect.
We are going to get into everything about the A's, but in talking about this episode weeks ago, we were sort of trying to think like, okay, there have been other relocations that were acrimonious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Colts leaving Baltimore in the middle of the night is one of the more famous ones. Everything that happened with the Browns becoming the Ravens. But it's hard to think, like, most of them sort of have a quickness to them. The team leaves, it gets out of Dodge, and then we sort of like move forward from there. What makes the Athletic situation unusual is that they're finishing this first season in Sacramento, and then they have at least two more that they're planning to do there before they make the move to Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up that this reminded you of our local NFL franchise.
Woo!
when the Titans, then Oilers, first left Houston. So
yeah,
let's give the listener here a little bit of background on what the hell happened back in the mid to late 90s. Let's start in 1995.
Yes. So Bud Adams is the owner of the Houston Oilers, who play in the Astrodome, was once called like one of the wonders of the world.
Yes.
It was considered one of the most innovative pieces of sports architecture when it opened in the 60s.
Yep.
You know, it didn't age well. It's got a look about it. And obviously, I'm just going to go again really fast here. The NFL aggressively incentivizes its ownership groups and franchises and all that to get into the stadium building business. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into why. We're just going to keep moving.
I'm sure we'll do that episode one day.
Keep building stadiums. Yes. Keep building stuff.
Yeah.
Okay? It's funny because as we talk about this franchise, they're in the middle of building a giant-ass stadium that
with a lot of public money.
Pretty sure. I was about to say, you and I as taxpayers in this county
we're
are
helping.
Paying for it. Yeah, we're tatting up. Mm-hmm. Really excited. I'm sure I'm going to get some free tickets out of this. Bud Adams is the owner of the Houston Oilers. Just real fast, like, mm-hmm. To set the table, there was a team called the Houston Oilers.
Yeah.
They had an oil derrick as the logo, and which is really good looking on a helmet.
You know what? It was awesome. It did look awesome.
Oh, so sweet. Baby blue and predominantly white.
Mm-hmm.
Just, which is kind of the color you should wear in the Houston heat. Like, it was a badass look.
Yeah.
And it was so distinctly Houston, Texas.
Yes.
And it just made sense. And Bud Adams, if you've ever seen any pictures of him or videos of him, you can go Google him or look on YouTube where he's giving the double birds to people from his skybox. He's Texas, bro.
Yeah.
He's Texas. There's a story in the future from where we're at right now about how insistent he was on drafting Vince Young from the University of Texas, arguably Texas's most famous player. So, of course, a guy who is really just like to the bone a Houstonian moves his damn team to Tennessee because he got a stadium in Tennessee. He got what the NFL incentivized
right.
as a way to make more money. And this is in the 90s. This was not – you may push back on this because we have the Ravens Browns to Ravens saga, formerly the Baltimore Colts, going on in this moment. But this was a bigger deal, it felt like, at the time. I mean, not that the Browns aren't synonymous with Cleveland, but this one was just really inexplicable because, Ryan, they were the Tennessee Oilers.
Yes. All right. So let's review what happens here. 1995, this move gets announced, but it is a forward-looking move so that they can get a stadium built.
Yeah.
1996. This team still plays in Houston. How does that go?
Great. Nailed it. Awesome. Everyone's real excited. Real excited. Before we get into that part, this is not a bad football team or franchise.
Sure.
Like, this isn't like abysmally bad.
Right.
So this team is going to bear fruit in the next couple of years.
It's a very Jeff Fisher football team.
For sure. But like Steve McNair's in the pipeline. Yep.
Eddie George is there.
Like a really good defense. Mm-hmm. So I just want to set the table by saying this wasn't like a terrible team.
No, this is not. The Oilers have had some bad years, but this was not the like, two wins.
The recent Athletics of Oakland have had some really, really bad years because of ownership. So the one year in which everyone who's in the giant Houston Metroplex knows that their Houston Oilers football team is moving away because of a real estate deal, attendance craters.
Yes.
On what should have been at least like a normally attended season, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
Right.
So the Houston Oilers move to Tennessee.
Yes. Everyone involved, the city, the franchise, and the NFL are like, because they're supposed to stay in Houston until the new stadium is done Nashville.
Yeah.
But everyone agrees this is not a good plan. We are not, the vibes are bad here.
Yeah.
So the Oilers move 2 years early to Tennessee. Where do they go first?
Well, the stadium's not built yet, Ryan, which is a small problem. So where are we going to play this bad boy? So this is where I now shift out of the Texas mindset into the Tennessee mindset. So we are sitting in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes.
If you look on the state flag of Tennessee, you see three stars. Those three stars are meant to represent the three distinct, really going to hit that word, regions of this state.
East, west, and middle.
East, west, and middle. You and I live in Middle Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Nashville is Middle Tennessee, basically, more or less. Memphis is West Tennessee, more or less. Knoxville is East Tennessee, more or less. Yeah. Shout out to Johnson City and, you know,
Chattanooga counts as East Tennessee, too.
Chattanooga is North Atlanta, in my opinion.
Yeah,
what
sure.
are you going to
okay,
do?
Fair.
So there is a palpable disdain.
And these segments of Tennessee have always had like internal friction.
This is where
themselves.
I'm going. Yeah,
the state capital is in Nashville.
Correct.
Memphis and West Tennessee, traditionally a very black part of Tennessee.
Blacker.
That factors majorly into how they are treated by other parts of the state.
East Tennessee, far whiter.
Yes.
I very jokingly sum it up this way to people who don't understand.
Yeah.
And there's this old thing, I don't even know if this is mathematically true, but it's colloquial, so I'll throw it in. is that you could drive. It's shorter to drive from Memphis to Canada than it is from Memphis to the furthest east point of Tennessee. That's how this that's how this state lays out, y'all. But inside of that geography,
yes,
because all the other southern states below it are sort of sliced up vertically,
yes,
and culturally that's just the way it like it's more representative,
yes.
And so Memphis is a lot more like Mississippi and Alabama,
yep.
You know, and then the Knoxville area is a lot. It's Appalachia. It's mountains.
Yes, it's a lot
it's
more.
Way
like,
more West yeah. Virginia, Kentucky, yes. Like. You know, Carolina.
Yeah.
And so you have these three distinct cultures. And Middle Tennessee is like, so this is how I always colloquially sort of like sum it up really quickly, which is like Memphis hates Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
East Tennessee hates everybody, mm-hmm. including America, because they're a bunch of hilljacks. And then Nashville's just kind of too busy to care, and yeah. they're not from here anyway.
Right.
That's kind of how I sum it up to people. But let's hone in on the fact that Memphis hates Nashville for yeah. a second. This yeah. is like a, just take what I'm saying as gospel.
Sure.
They do. The powers that be, which is a combination of like the NFL, the Adams family, all this decide like, we'll just play in Memphis for a couple years.
At the Liberty Bowl.
Which, so yeah, and there have been situations in the NFL's history where we've temped place, like we've stuck a team in a place for a minute for various reasons.
Sure, the Minnesota Vikings played at the University of Minnesota's outdoor field
yes.
after the Metrodome.
Yep.
Collapsed.
Still in the same
roof
state.
Collapsed, at least.
Basically in the same city.
Yes.
Because I believe University of Minnesota is in Minneapolis and not St. Paul. Mm-hmm. I'm almost certain. So, okay, no big deal, whatever.
Yeah.
And I also don't think, like, if the Vikings moved to St. Paul for a year or two, that Minneapolis would be like, nope. I'm like, oh, yo,
right.
Right. Nor do people in St. Paul be like, well, I can't cheer for the Vikings. So there's about a 3 hours drive distance, about 185 miles-ish between yeah. Memphis and Nashville. Memphis hates Nashville.
Yeah.
This is not looked at like that. This is not looked at as like, oh, San Antonio is going to be a really nice host for the Saints while they're displaced in Hurricane Katrina. Okay?
Right.
This is not like playing a Bills game in the Rogers Center in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
This is not like any of those situations. Have I run out of examples here? This is not like people in London.
This is not
who's
like
so like the NFL. They're yeah. like, oh, give us your Jaguars. We love the Jaguars.
Like never which not is, you which do is the an most, accent work on
that's
this.
That's better
okay.
than Spencer's.
That's where we are.
It's way okay. better than Spencer's.
All right. So this is, yes, this is very different. And
these are two cities.
If I remember correctly, all the players are living in Nashville at this point as well.
They're training
like
down the street from our office at Tennessee State.
Right.
They're playing
right.
home games in the Liberty Bowl in Memphis.
Right.
Memphis thinks, believes they're deserving of an NFL franchise. But Nashville gets the NFL franchise.
Right.
Pro sports has now started to come to Tennessee in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
The Nashville Predators are a couple years before the Tennessee Titans.
Mm-hmm.
We're not yet to the Vancouver/Memphis Grizzlies, but Memphis is eventually going to build out a state-of-the-art arena, the FedEx Forum, FedEx Memphis,
yep.
obviously.
Yep.
Smack dab on Beale Street downtown, okay? But we're not there yet. Memphis believes that it is a peer and equal to Nashville and superior because of pride. If someone was like, I'm trying to think of like, if you had your hated neighbor across the street, with like a nicer house and they're about to get a job that makes more money than you, and they're like, look, I'm getting a Bugatti, but I need to park it in your driveway.
But my garage is under repair.
I need to park it in your driveway
yeah.
for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
A year and a half. How well, 2 years, two seasons, how well are you going to treat said Bugatti? Not particularly well, are you, Ryan? So, yeah, I want to read from this. This is from the Sports Business Journal in 1997, just to give you an idea of kind of how things went.
Mm-hmm.
As of right now, I don't know if there were exceptions. COVID, I'm not going to count, and I
sure.
feel like you're going to be okay with this.
Yes, I am okay with that.
The now Tennessee Oilers playing in the city of Memphis mm-hmm. set record lows in NFL average, in attendance, not average, sorry,
how
per game.
How bad are we talking?
So the worst one is that they get into the 15,000s at one point. There's two sub 18,000 games.
Yeah.
There's varying reports on this, but that alone right there, like that average attendance, where whatever joke you've ever made about like a bad season for who would we pick on the Jaguars or something
sure,
like that,
sure.
not even close, guys.
Yeah.
This is abysmal. This is dated September 22nd, 1997. The Oilers reaffirmed their two-year commitment to Memphis on Monday despite abysmal attendance at their first two games at the Liberty Bowl.
Okay, so pause. So here's what's happened so far. The Oilers plan to stay in Houston. attendance was miserable and everyone hated them, so they leave for Tennessee early. Uh-huh. They move to Memphis, where attendance is miserable.
But they didn't really move to Memphis.
Yes, sure, right.
So this is the Sacramento.
But they're saying right now, yeah, we'll do 2 years here.
Yeah, this is Sacramento, basically. Mm-hmm. Okay. So here again, here's a comp we haven't discussed yet. Yeah. They're also not calling themselves the Memphis anything for obvious reasons.
Yes.
They're just the Tennessee Oilers right now because the genius Titans name has not been dreamt up yet. This is just, we're going to be the Tennessee Oilers, which is just as awkward in Nashville as it is in Memphis. But Memphis immediately recognizes the fact that, like, you've asked us again. You're going to park your luxury vehicle in our crappy driveway for 2 years before you continue.
Before forgetting about us forever.
Exactly. Yeah. And or just putting out ads locally and be like, you should buy season tickets and drive 3 hours to come to Nashville to support your Tennessee Titans.
Right, okay.
By the way, to this day, as we record this in 2025, that resentment and like arched eyebrow in Memphis of like our Tennessee Titans, mm-hmm, that is still met with angry disbelief.
Okay.
So yes, abysmal attendance. The vice president then at the Oilers at the time had to basically say, like, after two games, we're not leaving, I promise. Like, this, we're still going to do 2 years here. At the time, ESPN's Chris Mortensen said, the league acknowledges that it's embarrassing, it's not a good situation, and they're sending their own marketing arm in there to roll up its sleeve a little bit to get to work and see how they can fix the situation. This is from Mitch Album.
Mm-hmm.
Small-time writer you may have heard of from... somewhere, I think it might be Michigan. This is the fault of owner Bud Adams and the rest of the league. Did they really think carpet bagging the team to a 2-year temporary home would be a popular move? Pretty amazing. A league that fines players for not having their shirts tucked in allows a mess like this. It didn't go great, Ryan.
But they said they were going to stay for 2 years, so surely they did, right?
Anchor down, baby. somewhat hastily. The league slash, it's always funny how this is reported, because now in hindsight, and I don't know, it's like, I think there's like an informed fiction you inserted this, like, surely at the time the league said, you guys got to get the hell out of Memphis.
Yeah,
like,
right.
But, you know, of course it was mutually decided and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. So following that disastrous season in 97, again, stadium, not ready yet. Ryan. We don't have anywhere to play.
We're on to 1998.
Vanderbilt's board very generously, we don't know what the terms of the deal were, sort of became the home of the Titans in 1998. They go 8-8 that year.
Mm-hmm.
They're not selling a ton of tickets. The funny thing is, like, we can tell this story very differently if the football part of this doesn't go in one dramatic, well, the way it went, mm-hmm, which is in a very sort of dramatic turn.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I kept saying, like, this isn't a bad franchise. Like, there's seeds of things. We also sort of have to, like, I don't know, suspend or isolate our 10, 15-year history of making fun of Jeff Fisher. Like, this is Jeff Fisher at his best.
Yes,
man.
Sure.
They are building something here. And if you went to some of these games, like, you're seeing Eddie George in the Liberty Bowl. You're seeing, which is also another reason Memphis is pissed, is, like, this isn't a bad product. They're like, shit, this could have been ours.
Right.
There, I found a Jay Busby article, shout out to Jay, where, like, Memphis pitches a long time ago to the NFL. They wanted to have the Memphis Hound Dogs. Mm-hmm. That's what the Tennessee Titans were going to be if they were in Memphis. Like, but they picked Nashville. So, like, you're pissed because, like, oh, this is getting good. Like, you can see Steve McNair.
This could have worked.
By the way, from Memphis to Alcorn State is not that far away. That's where Steve McNair went to college. And so they're pissed. The Vanderbilt season is just more of a stopgap where they finish perfectly in all great Jeff Fisher teams, 8-8, right?
Yep.
They're
mm-hmm
second in their division.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything in that moment, and I would say, Ryan, kind of wisely for the first time, they've fallen into this giant PR trap, but they know they've got a stadium coming and they know that their football team's going to be pretty good. But what happens? So they finish year two in Vanderbilt. They're 8-8. The attendance is okay. People are kind of coming and going.
Right.
They're really focusing on selling PSLs and season tickets for this giant new NFL stadium that's going to open down the street on Broadway.
In 1999. Yeah.
So what happens in 1999?
So many things happen in 1999. They go to the Super Bowl. That's, like, the thing I think you want me to say.
Correct.
The Music City Miracle happens.
Correct.
So, and the other thing, which I didn't know until we were prepping for this episode, they won all 8 of their home games. They were perfect at, like, if you're going to sort of, like, be like, hey, come see our new football team, you could do a lot worse than we won. If you're a season ticket holder, We won literally every game we played in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
We gave you one of like the NFL's highlight playoff endings in the only playoff game we got to play at home. We went to the Super Bowl. Oh, also, we ditched the old name. We're not the Oilers anymore. This is the year they become the Tennessee Titans.
You pissed off a city
mm-hmm.
that your franchise was almost inseparably sort of
yes,
with.
Tied to. Yes.
You then went to another city who had been begging for an NFL franchise for years.
Yeah.
For decades.
Yeah.
And had some major heavyweight people, like yes. FedEx got involved, all that yeah. stuff. And you said not only no to them, but here, temporarily hold this
yes.
team.
Yes, no, but do me a favor.
Then you go to then you go to Nashville.
Yeah.
Where the city is not it city yet. You're right. You're still over 10 years away from the migration boom to Nashville, Tennessee.
Yep.
And you're sluggish selling tickets. They start the 99 season, and they have not blown the doors off of the PSL sales.
Mm-hmm.
From the reports I've seen, it looks like, it's funny because, you know, the team can kind of quote whatever.
Yeah, sure.
They didn't hit their marks.
Yeah.
Now, eventually they did, and getting a Titans ticket was one of the hardest things to do in this
right,
town.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying here, what I'm trying to lead to is this goes from like a hilariously bad, I would say, athletics level story
yeah.
to not at all. And yeah. almost kind of put under the bed, kind of hidden away, like dusted away.
Yeah.
Because of the 1999 football season for how good this football team was, saved them from all of those previous years embarrassed.
There's one other thing that happened in 1999 that I think contributed to that sort of like narrative shift.
Woodstock?
That's not what I was going to bring up, but you know what?
If Corn at Woodstock.
With enough time, I can get there.
Corn at Woodstock?
The NFL announced that Houston was going to get an expansion franchise.
Yeah.
And I think, I know Texans fans still hate the Titans. They really hate the Titans when they wear the Oilers throwbacks. Like, that is the biggest thumb in the eye, I think, possible in the NFL at this point.
I have to interrupt because the last time I was at a Titans game was when they played the Falcons. It was the Will Levis debut where he threw like three or four touchdowns against our shitty defense. They were in the throwbacks, mm-hmm. Ryan. So they're in the Tennessee Oilers thing. But that happens.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do the throwbacks, and it
sure.
does infuriate a lot of people in Houston, as it
yeah.
should. Here's what's funny about that.
Yeah.
They brought out Warren Moon to the 50.
Oh, man.
For, like, the commemorative, like, coin toss.
I hate this for multiple reasons.
Correct. There's the Warren Moon character
yeah.
judgment.
Yeah.
Which we could do a whole pot on.
Yeah.
But Warren Moon
is such a, like, primary figure.
This is,
yeah.
This was 2023 that this happened. Yeah, 2023.
This would be like if the LA Rams were like, and here's Kurt Warner.
Correct.
Beloved LA Rams.
Warren Moon
yeah.
doesn't mean shit
yeah.
to the city of Nashville.
Yeah.
So they still do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And nobody understands why.
Yeah.
They have the Ring of Honor people who, like, played in Houston and did
yeah,
amazing
right,
things for
right.
Houston. And they come to Nashville and people are like, okay, I guess.
Cool. Right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
They did announce the
Big
league,
Ten legend Jackie Robinson.
They did announce that, yeah, like, we're going to give Houston a team back. Because,
yes.
By the way, they didn't do that out of the kindness of their heart.
Yeah.
It's because a different ownership group
yes.
got their shit together
yeah.
to build a giant stadium
yep.
where terrible things happen years later. But to this day, Ryan.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm curious if this part, like, plays into the athletics. All of the Oilers' rich history.
Yeah.
Is
property of yes, it's not the difference between this and let's say the Browns is when the Browns came back, they kind of got to reclaim in large part the IP to
Absolutely.
The extent that Cleveland Browns IP is a thing that you really value and want to hold on to for whatever reason.
Yeah, but, I mean, as a member of a similar death cult, I would be really I don't think that it's valuable. I think it's just like
it's important.
You just want to show your suffering.
100%.
Like, yeah, you don't want those scars lasered off.
But yeah, I think the fact that Houston didn't have yes, Houston had to watch the Oilers, now the Titans, go to the Super Bowl with a bunch of players that they had rooted for.
Yeah.
And come within, you know, three ball lengths of winning a Super Bowl.
Correct.
But I think it probably, like, cooled things down at least a degree that Houston knew they were getting a new NFL franchise.
Yes.
It wasn't, sorry, we're gone forever. That's very different than what's happening in Oakland. Like, there is
yeah.
no one is suggesting, like, oh, don't worry. Major League Baseball is going to get you right.
There is not, to your point, I would say there is not a San Diego-level hatred of the Los Angeles Chargers in Houston for the Titans because the Texans exist.
Yes.
Now, that took a long time, and the Texans were not good. And they were a franchise team from scratch where the Titans
they went through
go
the
to
normal,
a Super Bowl, go to an AFC Championship again. Yeah. Like, they're like, you know, McNair, Hall of Famer, like, you know, all this, like, Eddie George, tons of other. Like, the Titans were really good for a while.
Yes.
And then other things happened.
Titans have had 2,000-yard running backs.
They've been to the AFC Championship three times since they got to Nashville. Yeah. Is that right?
Are we gassing up the Titans on accident? Let's not do this. Anyway.
That's gross.
So I think, to go all the way back, I think you are right that the move of the Oilers, now Titans, is the closest parallel we have seen to what the Athletics have done. That said, as we're about to find out before we take a break and hear from our friends at Homefield, I think Jen can make the case that, boy, the Athletics thing is still way messier than any of that.
I would agree with, I think I would agree with them.
So on the last episode of Phantom Island, I, during the ad read for Homefield, went to homefieldapparel.com and bought a USF long sleeve t-shirt. It's already arrived, it looks great, and my only real regret is that I jumped the gun, and if I'd waited just a little longer, I could have gotten in on new USF looks Homefield dropped. The lesson there is, well, keep an eye on Homefield's social channels so you don't miss out when great new things like this drop, including schools that are entirely new to Homefield. Is one of those coming? Might be. I'm not allowed to tell you. I can be trusted with secrets. But this puts you in what I will call the Homefield dilemma. Do you take advantage of the hundreds of beautiful and comfortable shirts, hoodies, joggers, hats, etc. that Homefield already has to offer you? Or do you wait in hopes of new treasure? Well, the advertisement reader in me says do both. But the friend to the listener in me says this is really a personal choice. It's one that's up to you to make, and I'm going to respect you whatever you pick. Okay, let's get back to the show and talk to Jen. Jen, first off, thank you very much for joining me on this episode. There is a lot to unpack with the Athletics, and I should specify, because this is what I'm reminded of every time I look at Major League Baseball standings, we're just talking about the Athletics. There is no name that goes before them. It's Athletics and Athletics alone.
That is correct, and they are very strange about it.
So we were talking before we started recording about one thing that's interesting to me is that a thing that kind of gets lost in the move to Sacramento, the possible eventual whatever move to Las Vegas, is the actual baseball team and the baseball they are playing. We are actually recording this while the A's are, I think right now they're losing to the Cardinals, last I looked. This is a team that is, it's not as bad as we have seen in, like, it's not 25 games under 500 bad, but it's under 500 bad. So, like, if somebody who's hasn't been paying attention to this team just as a baseball organization in a little while is coming to them, like, what's your assessment of what the A's look like as a baseball team right now?
So, yeah, right now they're bottom of the seventh, losing 3-0 to the Cardinals. They're a very interesting team. They're a very young team. And one of the things that has been interesting is they're fielding an interesting lineup. You've got Denzel Clark in the outfield, who, while isn't hitting as well as, like, everyone would hope he has made spectacular catches that he has made play of the week for MLB, like, 4 weeks in a row at one point, which, I mean, genuinely just amazing defensively in the outfield. You've got Jacob Wilson, who's a rookie who made the All-Star game. And then Nick Kurtz, Big Amish. Weirdest nickname. I can't even explain it. I know there's no explanation out there, but it's just still a weird one. But he's known as Big Amish, who hit 4 home runs in a game. There are a lot of young guys on this roster who are really fun to watch. And, I mean, there's Max Muncy the Younger, who does have the same birthday as the first Max Muncy that the A's drafted, who's also been interesting. They did trade Mason Miller, which I didn't think that they were actually going to do, but they did because it's the A's. But it has just been a very interesting team because they do have so many fun guys to watch. And it's one of those things where you think that if there was, like, a couple more veterans on the team, like, they could actually be playing 500 ball. But that's just not where it seems to be going, just based on, like, Fisher having made comments about, like, building a team for Las Vegas, when it's like, okay, well, what about the team right now? It does seem like these are guys who, you know, are just trying to find their footing in the big leagues, but it is something that gets lost in all of the A's drama because, I mean, watching Nick Kurtz and Jacob Wilson is genuinely fun baseball. So it's kind of a shame that, like, all of this and, like, a potential future of the A's gets lost in everything else that is being done.
It's also a team that this year is much worse at home than they are on the road. And I feel like that naturally sort of forces us to talk about the home that they're in this year, theoretically for the next 2 years, Sutter Health Park. Where to begin with their current setup? I mean, I feel like we should start with the press conference shed. Is that the best sort of, like, microcosm of what we're dealing with here? Can you explain what I'm talking about for the listener who hasn't seen a picture of this?
The press shed is like this. It's like a factory shed or like a farm shed that you'll find made completely out of metal that they have placed by the beer garden in the outfield. And what I don't think a lot of people also know is that that is also where they store, like, different food carts that are not being used during the game, pallets of soda. There's like a couple freezers there, dumpsters. And I'm like, you're putting the press shed by the... So yeah, that is the press shed. That is where a lot of the, like, Mark Kotze press conferences are being held after the game. If there's any other big things happening, it's in that press shed. It is quite possibly indicative of what the situation is at Sutter Health Park. This is not a ballpark built for Major League Baseball, that they have to finagle things, that we have a press shed where we don't know how hot it is in there sometimes during game days.
The other, I guess, interesting layout, interesting is such a generous word on my part, is the outfield is also where the clubhouses are for both teams. So these are not connected to the dugouts. So you will see during an A's game, like, what I think some broadcasters have called the walk of shame, where if you're in the dugout and you want to get to the clubhouse, action has to stop so you can sort of, like, quick jog to, like, this just seems sort of patently absurd to watch this happen during a game.
So in the minor leagues, it is not uncommon for clubhouses to not be connected to the dugout, just because, I mean, there's so many of these parks that were built in the 50s or the 40s or even the 30s. So a lot of the clubhouses are just not connected to the dugout. Sutter Health Park opened in about 2000, but as a minor league park, it was not necessary at the time for them to think about clubhouses connecting to the dugouts. So there is they remodeled the minor league home and visiting clubhouse last season to comply with minor league facility standards. Now, of course, with the A's coming in there, they wouldn't want to be stuck in the minor league clubhouse. So what they did is they built a two-story clubhouse right next to it in the outfield, which is how they can fit everything, to have it two stories. And the way that they have everything set up is that the Rivercats, the AAA team that still plays there, they keep their clubhouse. Nobody goes in while they're on the road. It's theirs. The A's have their clubhouse. Nobody goes in there when they're on the road. And then the visiting minor league clubhouse is also where the visiting major league players are. So all of these major league players are stuck in the minor league clubhouse there.
And they, like, players have also been pretty vocal about, I mean, obviously you see guys from road teams will come in and they'll sort of say, this is a joke. This is unacceptable. This is, like, I think it was a Cubs pitcher who basically said, look, I understand that
the Oakland situation was maybe not, you know, it was not a state-of-the-art stadium, but it was still a major league stadium compared to what we're playing in here. It has even trickled down, though, to, I know Mark Kotze has talked about the limitations of playing in a minor league ball field. Luis Severino has made a lot of comments about, you know, how it feels like spring training and how it's really hot. And it just sort of like, there is, I guess, some sense of, I think everybody involved in this understood that it was not going to be a major league park. Like for as much as they have done to try to make Sutter Health work for what it is, it was still going to have its limitations. But it does feel like the more that the Athletics have used it and opposing teams have used it, the seams kind of start to show and the frustration kind of increases. Is that your sense of it as well?
I think so. I mean, it's very obvious out there. Severino is not happy with the situation. Players, both home and away, have said a lot of things. I mean, what was it? You know, the Twins, you know, they had some stuff to say. I think the Phillies, too. I think Zach Leeler was one of them. The thing that I think is more telling, I don't think it's necessarily just that it's a minor league park, mm-hmm. but it is a minor league park that is used almost every day. Because when the A's are gone, the AAA team is there. And unlike all the other ballparks, like, there's no proper time to, like, make sure everything is kept up. So it just feels like it's around the clock that this field is being used way more than any other MLB park. And I think that is the aspect that also gets lost in it, is that how often this park is used. Not just that it's a minor league one, which is already a big part of the equation, but how frequently that field is used. And they were supposed to resod the outfield in June, but they kept it as is. They said that the sod was actually in a lot better shape than they thought it would be, but that was in June. We're in September now. I don't know how that sod has kept up till now. They redid the mound and I think the batter's area in June. And I know the mound was the one thing that they had talked about prior to June because of just how the ground was. But it's just still so frequently used. And actually, the A's AAA team right now is the away team in Sacramento today. And that's just also like one of those weird things where it's like, okay, you have the Giants AAA team being essentially like the home team there, and the A's are the tenant. Mm-hmm. Like, how is the major league team the tenant of a minor league team that is owned by the Sacramento Kings?
Yeah.
The Kings own both the Rivercats and the ballpark. So it is just a weird situation all around. And it is just like so frequently used that the wear and tear of the season is definitely showing a lot earlier than it would be at any other ballpark.
Some of that also, I feel like, has to do with the weather. Like, I know previously one of the considerations that they had sort of made was, well, maybe we'll switch the field to artificial turf. But then it was sort of brought up, like, it's going to get so hot. Artificial turf is not going, it can't stay cool when you're not in a domed stadium. And it feels like, I guess... there's a lot of this that feels like if this was the one year that they were doing it, if this was the transition year, and we've seen other teams in others, in, you know, in baseball and in other sports, the Rays are dealing with it right now, have to sort of make do with a transitional place. But the fact that this is, by even the most optimistic admissions, like this is the plan for the next 3 years, or for the rest of this year and two more seasons, does that feel practical? Does that feel sustainable? Does that feel smart at this point?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So here's what I would say is that, well, one, the Tampa situation is because of a force of nature.
Yes.
and the A's are not. And I think that's also where people are a little bit more lenient with Tampa's situation, mm-hmm. because that is not something that they can control. Whereas the A's was completely within their control. That's where the difference where like the A's are constantly brought up because they know that Tampa couldn't control their situation. Mm-hmm. That was Mother Nature, which completely understandable. You make do with what you have. The A's could still be playing in Oakland until they move, but that's not what they did. As far as the heat and the weather and everything, this might actually be considered a cool summer for the Central Valley, by which I mean the hottest is only 105. we haven't had a lot of days over 100 this summer. So like it's mostly been in the 90s, which if anyone knows how, you know, weather and science works, that means that the press shed is still really, really freaking hot. There is AC in there. I will say there is an AC system in there. But the other thing that I'm thinking of is the A's AAA team is already in Las Vegas. And they play outside in 115-degree weather.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys are probably already used to it, having played in Las Vegas. That said, is that what people expect from a major league team? No. So it's pretty much like these guys have definitely done it. They've done their time in the minor leagues. Unless like they're a Mike Leake or something, but that's like a very rare case. But it is not the level of like workplace quality that people expect for Major League. I am personally very interested to see how the Dodgers will react when they come in next season, mm-hmm. and they're in the minor league visiting clubhouse. And I think that's the thing. Like, these are guys who have now spent a lot of time in the major leagues, and the minor league quality of life in these workplaces are not the norm that they see in like all the 29 other ballparks.
Yeah.
And I think that ends up also just raising two things, which is why are the A's doing this? And also why aren't all the minor league facilities better? Which that's why there's a lot of movement and like building new ballparks and also a lot of like facility standards. It's getting there, but it's still in progress.
Yeah. The other thing I can't really tell based on sort of the national coverage at this point is whether there is any sort of local buy-in or interest or connection between Sacramento and the A's who are going to be here for some amount of time. What has sort of your observation been of that when you've gone to the park?
It's very mixed.
Okay.
There's a very mixed bag. There are still some people who have followed them from the Bay Area and, you know, try to go to whatever games. And then there is a lot of people who just do not want anything to do with them. As far as within Sacramento, it is very weird because West Sacramento, where the ballpark is at, is not technically even Sacramento County. It is Yolo County. Completely different government system, everything from the city of Sacramento itself. That said, it is very hard for like Sacramento to completely embrace them because they're not saying they're the Sacramento A's, even though there are some outlets out there that will call them that. But it wasn't until, I would say, June when they would start selling merchandise that did say Sacramento on it, and it wasn't just the Tower Bridge patch that they have. And even still, it just says like Sacramento on it. It doesn't say Sacramento Athletics. And I think that there is still this cognitive dissonance in the way that they are handling being in Sacramento. And I mean, they had a Mason Miller bobblehead in June. And on the box, it said 2025 Sacramento inaugural season, as if it's going to be the first of a lot.
Right.
So things like that, like they will say that they're in Sacramento, but they won't say that they're the Sacramento A's. The lack of acknowledgement is alienating a lot of potential fans, I think. And there's been articles about this. There's been articles in The Athletic that have talked about how like there is this kind of disinterest and just being indifferent to the A's being there. I have a lot of friends who are, you know, from Sacramento. They can't even tell you like how the team's doing just because they haven't paid attention to it. I don't think there's been a lot of outreach within the city itself either. And I am personally just waiting for the day that Gavin Newsom throws a first pitch.
Well, and some of that I imagine is that A's ownership is so focused on maintaining relationships with Las Vegas at a municipal level, trying to sort of like win over that community, win the sort of like press tour that they're going on, whatever. And it feels like they're not even bothering with the Sacramento of this because they're, I mean, to pardon the pun, they're trying to keep their eye on the ball, and the ball is Las Vegas. But that brings us to the John Fisher of it all. So John Fisher, the owner of the A's, is in the middle of selling the other team he owns, the San Jose Earthquakes. He's already sold off part of the A's to Aramark, the food vendor, who is this whole separate sort of like, you can go to that Wikipedia if you sort of want to dig into that. There's just a lot of like questions surrounding John Fisher at this point. I mean, there's always been questions surrounding John Fisher and the A's, but like from what I have read, it sort of feels like it's boiling down to, does this heir to the Gap fortune have, like, does he have the ability to get this team to Las Vegas successfully, or is he sort of going to financially stumble along the way? Like, what am I missing here about Fisher that sort of the national business sports side of things aren't necessarily going to tell me?
So this is where people keep telling me that I am uniquely qualified to cover the A's, because while I was born in the Central Valley, I went to middle school and high school in Las Vegas, and I went to college in Oakland. And that is a very, it is not many journalists who can say that they know all three regions very well. So as a Las Vegan, I can say my thought has always been that this will be baseball's Fontainebleau. Fontainebleau is a hotel and casino that took 17 years to build. And a lot of it was partly due to bankruptcy, the recession happening, pandemic, more bankruptcy, just a lot of challenges being built. I was in high school when it started being built in the first place. It wasn't until my second round of grad school where it got completed, and I had dropped out by that point. So that can illustrate the time lapse in how long that ballpark took. And it took also being sold to another ownership group in order for it to get built. And there was many years where there was just no developments at all. I keep saying that this is what will happen to Las Vegas ballpark, because in Vegas, they can build fast if you have money. Mm-hmm. This ballpark could get built so quickly if the money is there. The Mirage is currently being changed into the Hard Rock, and they're almost like, they're already making so much progress on it, way more progress than the ballpark. Granted, the building's already there and it's just easy to remodel it, but there's still way more progress. They just poured the cement for the ballpark like 2 weeks ago. And the Review Journal actually just reported that a development agreement was submitted to Clark County, and there's a building permit, and that there's still like zoning stuff that they need to deal with. They're still dealing with all of this red tape with Clark County and the city of Las Vegas. I don't know how long that's going to take. There was a time where they still had to wait for FAA clearance because they're building right next to Harry Reid. And because of that airport, they have to make sure that they don't like exceed a height limit, mm-hmm, because of airplanes.
Yeah, sure.
But the thing is, the fact that there is no money means we don't know when this is actually going to be completed. I don't think that they're going to make it on time. I was actually surprised that they did get a groundbreaking done in the quarter that they said that they would. But also, like, a groundbreaking is just ceremonial.
Yeah.
There's not really anything they do. They just dig a shovel into the ground and say they broke ground.
Such a ceremonial groundbreaking that, so if you look at the pictures for this, there's, like, excavators and, you know, earth movers and things like that, all of which were rented props. They were not construction tools that were actually being used on the site. They were just there as set dressing.
And I would like to note, if anyone noticed in the photos, it is yet another giant shed.
Some of the challenge with this stadium also seems to be, and I think this is true of probably all modern stadium projects, but for all sorts of tariff and trade related reasons now, the estimated cost of the stadium has grown outlandishly in the short amount of time. I think the original estimates had it around $1.5 billion with a B dollars. That grew to 1.75. I've seen it now up to 2. And again, as you said, this is a stadium. I mean, you can go and the A's have like a construction cam that you can watch the progress on. You can even, my favorite activity, and I'll go ahead and throw this out for people. You can choose different time lapses of different, you can say like the whole project, the last week, the last 30 days. And all you really kind of see is like things moving around. I will admit, I am not a stadium construction expert. So maybe all kinds of cool shit is happening that I can't appreciate, but it is not a time lapse that gives you a lot of confidence of like, oh, they're really moving on this thing. And it feels like the longer the approval processes go, the financing goes, the bigger that number is going to become. And that ends up putting a pinch on Fisher because of, like, ultimately, it does feel like the city and the local government has done a pretty good job of limiting how much they have to put into the pot for this baseball project.
Correct. And also, I mean, the thing is, there really isn't anything happening. I mean, they broke ground June. They just poured concrete. I don't know what else is going on there, but I mean, they are still just submitting approvals. They're still waiting on zoning. I don't know what's going on here. I don't think they even know what's going on here. The one thing that I do know is that nobody in Las Vegas wants them there. This is what I'll say. My conservative godmother's husband doesn't want them there. My socialist friends in Las Vegas don't want them there. I have made the joke that John Fisher found a way to unite both sides of the aisle.
Why is that? Because, like, the Golden Knights have done, I think, pretty well as an expansion team there. The Raiders move, I think, it seems like it has gone fine, or at least to the extent it hasn't. It's because, like, the Raiders have been a mess for a lot of that time. What is it about the Athletics moving to Las Vegas that is so distasteful to people who live there, or is so uninteresting to people who live there?
So when the Aces first moved to Las Vegas, what was different is a lot of community involvement. Same with the Golden Knights. And this is what my friend in Las Vegas has told me that she's seen happening there, is they are so involved in the community there from the beginning. And I remember when NHL announced that Vegas was getting a team, it was just a lot of excitement that we were getting like our first like Big Four team. And that was something that I never thought was going to happen as a child, because we were always like told, oh, it's never coming here because of the gambling stuff and like Pete Rose, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, because these two teams want community involvement, and also they were good.
Sure.
Both of these teams were good. And it was just an exciting time for Las Vegans to actually have teams to root for that have Las Vegas in the name. When it came to the Raiders, it was because it was such a contentious battle with Oakland, and also that the Raiders have moved a fair amount of times. That, like, from what I've heard, it is a lot of out-of-town fans coming to Raiders games, finding a weekend to just get away, see their team in Las Vegas, enjoy some time in Las Vegas, whatever. I do see Raiders fans around Las Vegas, because in Las Vegas, you can get the Raiders on your car license plate. So there are a fair amount of people with Raiders license plates. But it's not as talked about as the Golden Knights. I can walk into a Smith's or a Target Golden Knights everywhere. Mm-hmm. Aces. The A's have not done that. They've left a bad taste in everyone's mouth from the beginning because of the way it was handled. They saw what John Fisher did, how he negotiated with Oakland, how he's doing everything in Sacramento, how he's doing everything now in Las Vegas. It is just set up in a way that is leading people to either treat it like the Raiders and are just waiting for their team to come into town, and or people are just like not caring about them. They just don't want anything to do with it. And for locals, you have to have a good reason to go to the Strip, especially on an evening where there's other things going on. In like September, you're going to have like preseason hockey, you're going to have football season and MLB all happening around the same area. I mean, Allegiant is off the Strip, but that traffic's going to get on Tropicana. That's, locals are going to avoid that. They don't want to deal with that. It's going to be mostly for tourists who want to come in to see their team. For the A's, there's going to be locals who are going to go to see the Golden Knights because they always have. A's do not have that investment from the community because they've tainted the relationship from the beginning.
It also, what's interesting is there's also still a pretty active and pretty vociferous group that continues to push against the A's and continues like we've had the groundbreaking and we're sort of moving through the approval process, but more so than other relocations, it does feel like there is an organized sort of groundswell that is saying, hey, if there's a moment of weakness, or if it looks like this thing is falling apart, they are ready to move in and really wedge the city away from the A's as quickly and as decisively as possible as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that like there is way more opposition than support for the team. And whether it be vocal or just like a silent protest, there are still more people who would rather John Fisher sell the team than anything that is going on right now. And I think that is very telling about how people are feeling about the A's. And if you're looking at the crowd, I mean, obviously announced attendance is just tickets sold. There's obviously always way less in those stands. And it's a minor league park.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many times the A's have sold out this season, but it probably is something that I can count on two hands. At best. And it just makes me wonder, like, how are people going to go to the Strip to see them? It's going to be people coming in from out of town. I've been to Aviators games and I've talked to people around there just to get a pulse on how people feel. And it is pretty much exactly what I expected. It is really just a lot of people who want to see their team. I mean, the Aviators, prior to moving to Summerlin, which is my old neighborhood, which I call Scottsdale, but for Mormons, very cursed way to describe it, but it is the only way I can describe my neighborhood. God, where was I going with this? Before the Aviators moved out there, they were at Cashman, which is North Las Vegas Boulevard, above, you know, way north from the Strip, way north of downtown. And when they were the 51s, they were a Dodgers affiliate when I was growing up there. And before that, they were a Padres affiliate. And a lot of people my age in Las Vegas are Dodgers fans.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they want to switch fandom from the reigning World Series champion Dodgers to the Athletics?
Well, when you put it that way, yeah, I guess that doesn't seem very appealing. Okay, so...
And also, Las Vegas is Dodgers broadcast territory.
Right.
So it's right. Like, why would they want to switch to the A's when they can watch a team with Shohei Ohtani?
Yeah.
And so... they would rather just wait until the Dodgers come into town.
So we're going to, I mean, if we're going to play the cursed game of like, okay, imagine you're John Fisher. The picture we have painted is that you are in a minor league ballpark that cannot sort of like, has the limitations you would expect it to have and is going to have them if you remain there for the next 2 years, which everyone says you're going to do, at least as of now. You have burned every bridge possible in Oakland. You have not created a meaningful foothold in the city of Las Vegas, both in terms of winning over hearts and minds and in terms of like actually building and financing a stadium. That stadium's cost is only going up, and you are potentially looking like a lot of the questions being thrown around here is like, is John Fisher going to have to throw in a billion of his own dollars to make this stadium happen? So, like, if you're John Fisher, what is the move here? What is the thing that makes sense at this point? Because it does seem like, and I want to be clear, entirely through his own doing, he has sort of put himself in the worst place in the chessboard while still owning a Major League Baseball team.
It's funny because, like, the only way out is to sell, and he's not going to do that. He's made it clear that he is going to see this through. And I mean this, you know, Las Vegas has ads in the outfield in Sacramento, and not just Las Vegas, but Circa, the hotel and casino in downtown, which I just need to note that their parking garage is called the Garage Mahal. Just need to throw that out there for anyone who
I didn't know that, so I appreciate it for sure.
I learned that this season. I was like, I hate my town. But they have an ad out there. And it is just, there is no logical way for this to actually happen unless John Fisher does throw his own money in there, which is clear that he doesn't want to do, or he sells the team.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these things just do not seem possible, and he's just going to keep digging the hole metaphorically and literally deeper.
So then where do you, I like, from what I have seen you say about this, I think you are in the camp of skeptical that this stadium gets built. Certainly that it gets built anywhere close to the timeline that they've said. They've said this will be ready for the 2028 season. Like, if you had to sort of say where you think this is all going, what's your prediction with no real stakes on the table here?
Fontainebleau, basically. I've seen the timeline get sent to me. And the permitting process and everything for Clark County, all of this information is public. I have looked at this information. I have looked where things are at. Has it been approved? There are so many permits that are still pending. Some of it is waiting on the A's to respond to, so I'm just like, what is going on here? Mm-hmm, there's mm-hmm. not a lot of answers, and all of this is public information. If anyone wants to look up Clark County permitting process, just enter in the address on Las Vegas Boulevard, you'll get all the information. And because the permitting process isn't necessarily matching up to the very, very vague bullet point timeline that was given, and it was literally just here's some years and here's some things under the years that we're expecting to get done, there is no clear timeline of where things are. It is intentionally vague because there's a lot of question marks still, and I think because there is no clear plan, it is hard to really predict what is going to go on. The only thing that I can really go on personally is my knowledge of what has gone on this strip historically. And the Fontainebleau is the greatest example of trying to build something without the money necessarily mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm. That also feels like it probably, like, at least possibly explains the permitting slowness. Like, it almost feels like a permit comes along and somewhere in the A's financial offices, they're like, all right, how much cash can we say that we have to get this part of the permitting done, and then we'll worry about the next one in 6 months when that one's due. It's like they're almost living paycheck to paycheck, but they're trying to build a $2 billion stadium that way.
Yeah, and I mean, right now they are building the F1 track for Vegas, mm-hmm. and that's going to be in like 2 months. That's going to be ready because there's the money to do that. Vegas moves by money. And that's like always been the case, especially when they were run by the mob. You got the money, things will get done. I'm not saying that Las Vegas should be run by the mob again, but it is still how Like, the mentality operates there is show the money, things will get done. Fisher isn't showing the money. This is going to get, it's going to take such a long time to get done. And that has always just been the way Vegas has operated. And because there's no money, Fontainebleau.
So the other thing that's sort of baffling to me about this is that, and I feel incredibly naive saying this, and I'm just going to put that out there. I am shocked that Major League Baseball is just so cool with this. Like, this to me feels like a flagrantly embarrassing situation. Again, we talked about the Rays, and that's a different category. That is making do with what you have to do in a very unpleasant situation. There are like parts of it that are sort of like, well, that's a stadium discussion that's gone on too long as well with that city and that franchise. But like, okay, I do like to remember the times when the Rays were floating, like maybe we'll play half the year in Canada, but that's to the side. The idea that Major League Baseball would say, yes, we're going to take one of our brands that people know pretty well and has seen some like very big highs in most baseball. I would say like most baseball fans can remember a good A's year, a good A's era, a great A's player or something like that. And we're going to do this sort of like stopgap measure for almost the amount of time it takes you to get an undergraduate degree to do this Las Vegas. Like, there's I'm rambling a bit here, but like, why do you think baseball has said, yeah, it's fine, you can do this in what feels like a very ugly and unprofessional way?
I mean, if we see who the commissioner is, Rob Manfred clearly works for the owners. And the other thing with Rob Manfred is this is the guy who reversed the permanent ban on Pete Rose. Like, there are no morals here. It is the Wild West. We don't know what's going to happen. Usually it's just like a nightmare scenario going on. So, I mean, it makes sense under Manfred. And then it just makes you wish that Selig is back. And then that makes it weird because you hate everyone hated Selig too. And I mean, that the whole Expos to DC was orchestrated under Selig.
Yep.
So now we've got this orchestrated under Manfred, but in the most like, in the most dumpster fire way you can imagine under a guy like Manfred. And I think that's where it comes in, that these are all just billionaires with no scruples being, you know, with a guy answering to them who has even less scruples. So it is just a chain reaction of a tire fire rolling down a gasoline river.
I also kind of idly wonder, like, is it useful for baseball to have the A's floating in this middle ground so that they can sort of dangle, like, well, Nashville, Salt Lake, like, hey, Raleigh, like, we know you're looking, so there is the possibility that if this goes south, we have an asset we can flip to you, but maybe that's speculating too far. The last thing I want to ask you, because we are talking about, as we said at the top, an A's team that has improved, has sort of emerged from the couple of years there where it was like, geez, like, how quickly are we going to get to 80 losses? It felt like. There is some possibility, and I think given the sort of young core that they've developed and maybe with a year under their belts in Sutter Health, they have like a better sense of how to make this park work for them. There is some possibility that this is a team that could make the playoffs in the next 2 years, let's say. What will happen then? Like, I've seen Major League Baseball Rob Manfred basically said, like, oh, if that happens, maybe we'd let them play one round. But we're not going to host the World Series in this ballpark, which you've already signed off on to say you can play 81 games there otherwise. Like, what would actually happen in the unusual scenario that the A's, you know, get a wild card spot or something like that and then don't play in their home park that's not their, like, what do you think that even looks like?
I have been so desperately wanting the A's to have at least one playoff game just because I want to know where they put media. Right now, media is in a converted minor league suite.
Yeah.
And I call it the press balcony because it's two rows, which at first was like a college classroom seating with a folding table on the side of the chair. That has seen so many different changes throughout the season. It's wild, but it's a converted suite. It's very clear. There's two rows out, you know, on a balcony, and they can't fit everyone. I'm wondering, like, are they just, would they just like put everyone in the berm or something? Like, would they come up with seats and tables? I want to see how they would make it work and like what would happen, especially when like there are teams coming in and what they would say. And I have just been curious about that, or if they'll just like move it to a neutral site. And then that would raise so many more questions, and I really don't know what they would do with it. I am curious to see how they would do it. But I really don't know, because like the A's aren't close to getting to the playoffs, and it's a struggle to try and see if they are going to be anywhere close to it during their time in Sacramento, or at least like during the time in Sacramento that we are aware of.
Yeah.
Because I have also watched a lot. I mean, not just the Las Vegas Aviators, but I've also watched a lot of Stockton Ports games, which is low A for the A's. And I've made this, this observation that when the major league team is good, sometimes the minor league, you know, farm system isn't that good because all the guys are up. Yep. If the major league team is bad, then the farm system might be good because they drafted better. There's a rare occasion where both the major league team and the farm system are good. This is a very rare occasion where the major league team is not great and the farm system also is subpar. I've never seen that in my entire time watching the minor leagues. It is very, very rare. Maybe there might have been one or two occasions where that happened, but it is very hard to try and figure out what the future is of this team because, I mean, A-ball guys can improve past there. And there's another conversation there about how many levels they nuked in the minor leagues and how that's affecting quality of play. But we don't know exactly who will be a rising star in the minor leagues because it's the A's. We don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Jen, if people want to continue to keep tabs on this saga, where can they find you on the internet where you can be probably ruthlessly mocking whatever the A's have said they are or are not doing in the city of Las Vegas?
I'm on Blue Sky at jenramose.online. A lot of my bylines are either at Defector or The Objective.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to continuing to watch the construction cam and reporting on how much dirt they moved from one side of the lot to the other.
Thank you for inviting me.
I recorded that interview with Jen 2 weeks ago, so a few updates. First, the A's went 4-2 in their last two home series to improve to 33-42 in Sacramento. They are still, as of now, the only team in Major League Baseball with more road wins than home wins. Nick Kurtz also hit a 493-foot grand slam, the longest home run in all of baseball this year, in one of those home victories. Oh, and the Memphis to Canada thing Steven mentioned, it's not actually true on either side of the state. But to give you a sense, Knoxville to Windsor, Ontario, which is just next to Detroit, is a little over 500 miles. Knoxville to Memphis is about 400. Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber and presented by Homefield. Our theme music by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard comes from the song Phantom Island from their album of the same name. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.